It's the top of the hour, and we want to kick off the third meeting of AB 617. Welcome back, committee members. Welcome to the public. For those of you who are new, we just kind of want to go through some small housekeeping issues. The restrooms are towards the back and to the left. For those of you who have laptops or would like the Wi-Fi, it's Shafter 49 in lowercase. So Shafter 49 in lowercase if you'd like to utilize the Veteran Hall's Wi-Fi. In addition, obviously we have translations and there are headsets available. It's two-way, both in English and in Spanish, both for the public and obviously for committee members. There are three individuals who always make these hearings a success, and you probably all know them by heart, especially the committee members. Cynthia, my able-bodied note taker for tonight, Cody, and then Rachel, who over here, who you probably all met at the front door. So it's a little after six. We've got a full agenda, and we want to get through as much as possible. With two meetings under our belt, we felt that we wanted to utilize and look at how best to basically engage the public and the committee a lot more. So we're going to reformat a little of how these meetings are run. So just bear with me. Let me just kind of lay some of the ground rules, and then from there, if you have any questions, we can talk about it. So first, what we're proposing is that the Air District will make their presentation tonight and in the future on any given subject, okay? What we'd like, basically, is for the microphone to be passed around the horseshoe because we value the committee's comments and questions. And if you don't have anything to say, that's fine on the given topic, but we want an opportunity for the committee to at least, again, comment or ask any questions. Just as important is the public, and we've always waited to the end of the hearing for public input, but we think based on the timeliness of the issue at hand, and tonight we'll be air monitoring, if the public has comment, we would like that comment at the end of the presentation. Okay, so a little bit of different format, but again, we want to be as transparent and we want to be as engaging as possible for all committee members and the public to be able to, again, state your comments and have any questions. So is there, that's pretty clear, I think. And I think it'll be a little bit more efficient and a little bit more engaging. And don't be shy. Some of you haven't spoken, some of you are copious note takers. But again, if you have comment or questions, we want to hear. So in addition, after the public comment period, if we need to, we'll definitely have time to engage a little bit more on the topic at hand. So we don't want to rush the issue for the committee members and the public. As you can see in our third meeting, there are two important topics that we need to discuss tonight, but it's not as packed as the first two meetings. And so we want to do a little reformatting to give you enough time to be engaged on the process, and I think that's fair. And last but not least, Cynthia will be taking notes, and so she will basically be building or helping me build consensus throughout the discussion. And it is an opportunity for committee members to also download when you leave here and also in real time to see what the critical issues that some of you are bringing to the attention and also potentially what the public is bringing out as well. So again, Cynthia's going to be busy, and if there's a policy question that's a little bit into the deep into the pool and is not relevant to tonight's hearing, and a lot of you have some thoughts, we can obviously approach that at the end of the evening when we discuss what next topics we're going to discuss in item number meeting number four. So with that, any questions? Yes, sir. I'm sorry, Gustavo, hold on. Let me just so you don't have to yell.
Hello? Nate. Gustavo Aguirre with CCJN. So there is quite a few things that were left unfinished from the previous meeting. Mm-hmm. So when will we have time to address those? Would it be before we jump into action item number three?
So what we would like to do, depending on what those topics were, and could you be more specific about
what? Yeah, so there's mainly three things that came to mind. One was a definition and the methodology of using the consensus process, how that process ultimately will come to life. At the moment that there is no consensus reach, is there then a motion to do a vote, or will the Air District take that on? That's one.
Well, based on my download and based on my review of what happened, Gustavo, the committee agreed on we would reach a consensus if we... It was based on consensus. And if we could not reach consensus, I think then we would basically probably debate the issue a little bit more and to look at both sides of the issue.
And is the methodology of using that consensus, is that the horseshoe approach?
Absolutely.
The horseshoe approach is a consensus process. Okay.
617 okay, committee members.
Okay, got it. So I think we could address that. And the other was the 7-mile buffer zone. The last meeting, Dave Warner said that was something that was going to be considered. But kind of where did that leave off from?
So, Gustavo, you're going to have an opportunity tonight to look at the 7-mile radius plan and some of the sources that we talked about in number two, in meeting two. And during that break, take a look at that, and then you're all going to come back, and then we can address that issue.
Okay, so we're going to be looking at the proposal for the 7-mile radius.
Yes, we are.
Okay, cool.
Yep, and they're on the maps.
And then I think the last one was, and I'm not sure unless I was impending to, but on the disclosure kind of act within the steering committee, I'm not sure where that was left off as well.
Disclosure as sharing information?
Like for each of the steering committee members filling like an affiliation form or a disclosure form, that was also something that was kind of left in the open.
Okay.
So I just want to clarify
that. I think that's something that we would probably take up at the next meeting. Okay, I get you want transparency and full disclosure, but that's something that we would want to talk about at potentially
the next
topic.
Okay. So those were the kind of the three main things that we.
Okay.
So then the kind of consensus form is the horseshoe, the 7-mile radius. Today, are we going to practice the consensus process on approving the 7-mile radius?
I think Cynthia will be taking notes, and the committee obviously will have input. And if we can reach a consensus tonight, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Cool.
You can see, we're a little light tonight on committee members, but, you know, I'm sure we can get there.
Okay, cool. And then there was additional documents that were submitted. Where can we talk about that in this agenda?
So are we talking specifically about pesticides?
Yes, the TAC.
So all of you should have received a map and a graph regarding pesticides. And those are being taken into consideration, but it is not a topic that we want to talk about tonight. But again, under the lighter item of topics for meeting number four, we could bring that up.
Okay.
Is that fair?
Got it. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you, Gustavo. Okay, so moving on, let's get into 617, deadlines and calendar reviews. So the good news is it's in cement, the second Monday of each month. All right, and then you should have an outline of March and April's meeting all the way pretty much through July, which is where the charter for this committee was formed in terms of public input. Is there any thoughts on the calendar or potentially the agenda items that have been laid out. So what we'd like to do is just, if you have any thoughts on the calendar, or just, you know, if you don't, then Scott.
What were the topics? Calendar?
Yes, it's the steering committee calendar. And the deadlines.
Nope. I have none.
I'm actually good with the calendar also.
Oh, hold on.
My name is Bianca Santoyo, and I do have one in regards to bringing DPR to the meeting, to the table. I haven't seen them. I don't see it in any of the agenda.
DPR. Mm-hmm. Gabby?
I'm good. Okay.
Edward? You're good? Anna?
Okay.
You're good? Gustavo?
Yeah, are we looking at this agenda?
Exactly.
Okay.
We just want committee input on the calendar.
Okay. So, si saben, lo que estamos haciendo es viendo ese calendario y lo que vamos a hacer es responder. Entonces, aquí está el calendario, porque no se explicó muy bien. Pero aquí está el calendario y tenemos que ver si las juntas que están aquí son juntas que trabajan con todo el grupo. Because I think it was really not explained, like, understood correctly what we were looking at. So it's this document here, right?
It's this document that you were given in terms of the items that we are going to be looking at and the months that we are going to be addressing the key items.
Yeah, man, I have no comments right now. I still got to look at it.
Maria?
No.
Okay. Antonio?
No, thank you.
Angela? No? Mr. Nguyen?
In the calendar, in March, we're going to be looking at the Community Emissions Reduction Program requirements. So just the requirements, not necessarily the program. As we're sort of developing the monitoring plan to determine what actually is going to be proposed.
Yes. I think that's, well, go ahead, Cynthia. What's going to be proposed versus the plan itself?
Okay.
Is there anybody from the public who wishes to make comment? Cody's got the mic.
Thank you. My name is Vince Saragosa. I was interested in the calendar, but I was informed the public doesn't have access to that document.
Oh, it's in the back. I'm sorry.
According to this person here, there's none.
here you go.
Here, oh, is that for
just,
me?
Here, just take mine. No, the public has access. We just ran out.
Okay. I'm misinformed. Sorry.
No. Anyone else from the public? Thoughts? Does everyone need a calendar? Let me just raise your hand if you're missing one. So, Jamie, there's like three or four that have got their hands. Sure. There's another gentleman in the back. Thank you, Jamie. So let me give the public a minute or two to digest it. Just take your time.
Thank you.
It looks like an aggressive, quick schedule, which I think we all realized in the beginning of this program. But just to be clear, the process is to look at how there will be or where there will be monitoring. And then subsequent to that, there'll be a reductions plan proposed. And how does that timing actually
Well, I think
work?
John Klassen is here tonight. He's our next presenter. And I think once he presents, okay. John, I think you'll get a better feel of where we're going on the air monitoring.
That's a valid concern. If I can interpolate what you're asking, John, is that we won't have any data when we come up with this plan because the monitoring plan will have just been born, let alone implemented. So I think that's the concern.
Okay. Yeah. So let's wait for the presentation, and then John, Scott, I think your issues through John Klassen's, PowerPoint may answer, but at that time we can kind of do a deeper dive on it. Okay, is there anyone from the public who's got some thoughts, questions, comments on the draft calendar? No? It's good? Well, I mean, we're trying to stay within this framework. If there's something that you'd like to add, why don't we just wait to the next, is there something specific that you want moved around, or?
No, I'm just wondering if this is just.
Yeah, again, this is just the backbone, the foundation of what we think in the next couple months issues that 617, needs to address. So if there's some further deeper dive that we need to do, then, let us know and Cynthia can, put it up on the board. Okay. Thank you. Gustavo.
Thank you, man. And so in March, it looks like we're going to start the discussion of the requirements for the CERP, which is a Community Emission Reduction Plan.
Right.
And then in October, September, October, that's the timeline where they will be finalized and set to be voted on and approved by the district and ARB?
That's my understanding.
And then, okay, cool. And then the air monitoring plan, is that going to be independent from this, or is that going to feed into, is it the information that is collected from the air monitoring plan that will be, deployed in, looks like, potentially in July? Is that information going to feed into that, or is it going to be separate?
So, Gustavo, let John go through his PowerPoint, for sure. And then I think we can kind of do a deeper dive. But great, great questions. Okay, anything else? Oh, public, Cody?
Hi, Linda Urata, Kern Council of Governments. It's not critical tonight, but when you look down at the bullets below, it says discussion of stationary source concerns and opportunities, and the first two mentioned are mobile sources, heavy-duty trucks and passenger vehicles. So I don't know if there's something that's missing that was meant to be there. And then my other suggestion for a new bullet would be incentive programs and fundings from other sources, such as CARB, the Energy Commission, and other types of dollars.
Duly noted.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Well, if that's it, then we'll just close this portion out. You've all had time, and again, it's nothing's set in stone, but we'd obviously, like to move on. But if you have some additional questions, but we just think that we've built a consensus here that the topics at hand for the next coming months are relevant to 617, and that the committee and the general public, have had an opportunity to give us input. So again, it's through osmosis, all of you can ask questions during the relevant topic at hand. Good? Maria, hold on.
Buenas tardes, Maria Márquez. Estoy viendo aquí donde la señora comentó de los camiones pesados y vehículos de pasajeros. Pienso que la prioridad aquí en el valle no son autobuses ni carros ni nada, son, creo que la pesticida que la ponen acá más abajo debería de estar en primer lugar. Y en la contaminación del suelo, que es lo que más nos afecta. Pienso que se debería de poner más énfasis en pesticidas y lo que más nos afecta aquí, en el valle, aquí pues, en el pueblo.
Thank you, Maria. Cynthia, let's just put pesticides, more emphasis. As I mentioned earlier, Maria, we end up receiving two documents, and we can talk about that for the next meeting topics. So we realize you want that as a priority and up on the list, but I, quite frankly, I think all of the sources of emissions are very important. So at some point, you know, depending on how we do this, you know, we'll look at each source, and from there, you know, you can have a little bit more input. So, but duly noted in terms of pesticides. Anyone else? Gustavo? Where's the... That's all right. It's all right.
And I think it's really piggybacking on her comment, because I see here the discussion for mobile sources concerns and stationary, but not area sources concerns, areas of sources pollution.
Okay, well, with that, let's move on to item number four, the development of Shafter Air Quality Monitoring Plan. And with further ado, let me introduce John Klassen. He's the Director of Strategies and Incentives, and he'll be making a short PowerPoint presentation to the committee and to the public. Cody, if you can get the lights, and John, I think the clicker's over here, and...
All right, good evening, everybody. Thanks for being here tonight, taking your time. Really appreciate it. So as Jimmy said, I'm John Klassen. I'm the Director of Strategies and Incentives at the Valley Air District, and I'm going to spend some time talking this evening about community air monitoring plan here for the Shafter community and what that's going to look like, what we can do here in Shafter, and then we'll get your feedback on what this could be for the community of Shafter. So just a bit of background here on community air monitoring as a part of AB 617. So as you know, AB 617 includes requirements that air districts deploy air monitoring communities that were selected by CARB, and Shafter is one of those communities, of course. Air monitoring for first-year communities must be in place by July of this year, so that's coming up pretty rapidly this summer. This is going to supplement existing monitoring that's already out there throughout the San Joaquin Valley and here in Kern County. Which we do have here in Shafter already. We have a long record of some air quality data here in Shafter. And the data that we collect from our community air monitoring system could help feed into the development of the community emission reduction programs, which is a question that Gustavo had. So this will definitely be helpful for that. I'm going to go over a bit of detail on the platforms and equipment that we're developing for use here in Shafter, coming up here soon this summer. And I'm going to talk a bit about how access to that data will be allowed for the public here in Shafter, for people across the valley to view what's going on with the data that we're collecting here in Shafter in real time. And as future communities are selected under AB 617, we'll be developing additional community networks going forward, not just in Shafter, but other communities throughout the valley. And I did want to mention, too, that we already do have a large, if you're not aware, we have a large air monitoring network throughout the San Joaquin Valley, up in the Stockton area, all the way down to here in Bakersfield, even south of here into Lebec. So between us and the California Air Resources Board, we monitor about 35 to 40 air monitoring stations throughout the valley. So it's a big effort to make that happen each and every day and each and every year. And the work that we're going to do here in Shafter is just going to expand that even more. So a bit on the community air monitoring plan for AB617. So we at the Air District, we're responsible for developing this plan. Of course, we're going to get the feedback from the steering committee here in Shafter on what that plan should look like, what we should focus on. So that's going to be really valuable. And the AB617 blueprint that CARB has put together, it describes 14 elements that need to be included in the community air monitoring plan, which I'll go over here in a moment. But these elements are really designed to provide a process that results in action, what CARB calls action-oriented data to meet the needs of the community here. And it talks about different elements such as quality control for the data, best practices to run the equipment, how we can have collaborative partnerships, accuracy of the data, and what public access to the data will look like. And the elements describe all these, which we have listed here. And I can just go over these in a bit more detail about what these really mean. So these 14 elements that need to be in our air monitoring plan for Shafter, one of them is community partnerships, which describes the steering committee process, which we already have here in Shafter, which is great. We have this going and we can talk about this. We need to talk about community-specific purpose for air monitoring, where we're going to hear it back tonight from you guys, what your concerns are for air quality in Shafter, how we can monitor that and understand that. We'll talk about that here. Scope of actions is important as well, where we describe a number of actions that could be taken based on what concentrations of data we may collect here in Shafter. What are the objectives of air monitoring here in the community? Where we talk about, here's the exact pollutants we're going to measure. Are we trying to measure peak concentrations somewhere, upwind, downwind? What's really important to us? Roles and responsibilities for monitoring here in Shafter. It's going to describe a bit more about what we're going to do, what the community could do, what CARB could do, and kind of define those different roles. Data quality objectives, which needs to describe different goals we have for the data, meaning precision, bias, and sensitivity of the monitoring equipment that we're using. We're going to describe in more detail the monitoring methods and equipment, where we're going to get more detail on equipment we're going to use to measure various pollutants and describe that in the plan and how those operate and work. Monitoring areas, which we'll hear some more from you tonight about where we should be monitoring here in Shafter, what areas of town, outside of town, upwind, downwind, like I mentioned, to get your feedback on that. Quality control procedures, we'll describe that as well, where we're going to talk more about different standards and calibration practices we should use to ensure that our equipment's operating precisely and accurately. Data management, we'll describe how we're going to be collecting the data into a database, organizing it, being able to report it back out to the public. That's going to describe this in detail as well. We'll describe field measurements, where we will describe different standard operating procedures, how we're going to be operating the equipment, chain of custody forms if we're sending samples to laboratories, and also how we're going to make logbook entries to make clear what we're doing at the sites. We'll describe that in detail. We'll also evaluate the effectiveness of our program. We will look back on a regular basis to make sure that we're following our original objectives in the plan that we're going to lay out. We're going to analyze and interpret the data as well. We'll talk in the plan about how we're going to be sharing this data with the steering committee here, with the community of Shafter, and how we're doing with air monitoring data, and then communicating the results. We'll have the data available in real time for the public to see, and again, coming back to the committee to give them regular reports on what the data is looking like. So these 14 elements are what the plan needs to have included. So we'll take your feedback on what you think about this, and we'll start developing our plan after tonight. So a little more detail on the goals of our monitoring plan for us all to remember is that we need to make sure that our monitoring plan has clear goals and objectives that we're going to define. We need to make sure that the approach we're going to take with monitoring here in Shafter is focused on what we really need, what information we need, and what the appropriate monitoring technologies are that we need to get to be able to capture the information that the committee is interested in here. And the plan that we develop really should assist us in our air monitoring goals for Shafter. where we'll be able to have community-level air quality analysis and evaluation of long-term trends, different from the more regional approach that we take right now with air monitoring. This is going to give us very local information that we can look at to understand what's happening better here in Shafter. And the data that we collect through this ongoing process is going to help assist us in developing the community emission reduction program to be able to see how things are changing here in the community of Shafter, and that question already came up. So this will feed into that and assist with that. So a little detail here on air monitoring in Shafter already. I mentioned there's already a site here in Shafter, and there is. The site has been here since 1989, and CARB and the district have jointly operated the site for quite some time. It's at the DMV building here in town. This site has historically recorded ozone, oxides of nitrogen, and VOC information, as well as meteorological data. And there's a link here on the website where you can go to CARB's website. From here, you can view historical data from Shafter if you want to go back in past years, look at how things have changed here, look at the trends that's available for you. The Department of Pesticide Regulation has also monitored ambient pesticide concentrations in the Shafter area since 2011. This data is also available on the DPR website, and there's a few links there in the presentation for you to take a look at, and you can look at data from the past there as well. And there was a request by the committee here to try to get air monitoring expanded here in Shafter before our July 2019 deadline to get this going, and we have done that. I just wanted to give you guys an update that as of end of last week, we've started PM 2.5 monitoring now in Shafter at the DMV site here in town. So instead of just ozone and oxides of nitrogen, we're now measuring particulate matter of 2.5 microns or less in diameter, and that's going on right now. We're looking at the initial data right now from the monitor to make sure it's operating properly, but we'll plan on making that data available to the public soon so you can all see that data as well as other folks across the valley. So we already have some early action to expand monitoring here in Shafter. We will also be working over the coming months on the accessibility of this data for the community here. So there's something being developed on the state level called the CARB Statewide Data Portal, and this will be a place where data collected in Shafter will be available to the public in real time. So the public here can go look at that statewide portal, see the data happening here that's being collected in Shafter, as well as all the other AB 617 communities across the state that'll be available. We'll also be going through a process, and that'll be real-time data every hour you can view that. We will also be going through a process where at the district we'll be going through what we call a data validation process, where instead of just raw data being posted to CARB statewide portal in real time, we're going to take steps to go back, look at the data closely, make sure it's accurate, that it's measuring up to our objectives, and if changes need to be made to make it more accurate, to flag data, invalidate things because things weren't working right. We were going to go back and go through that process, then upload that validated, more correct data to CARB's website as well, so you can go back in time and look at a more high-quality data set to take a look at. There may also be samples taken during this monitoring campaign that will require laboratory analysis, and that won't be available in real time, of course. We'll have to take air samples, send it to a laboratory. They'll have to analyze it, get us a report back, then we'll post those on CARB's website as well. But that could take weeks to months to get that lab analysis back. That'll take some time. In addition, we'll also be displaying air monitoring data from Shafter on the district's website as well in real time. So it'll be available on CARB's statewide portal. It'll also be available on our website as well. So there'll be two places you can go to look at the data. So I wanted to take a minute here to talk a bit about the monitoring resources that we're developing for Shafter here, so you can keep this in mind as you take a look at the maps here in a few minutes, and then you give us your feedback on what you think is important for monitoring. So we're looking at developing, and we're in the middle of this process right now. It takes quite a long time to develop equipment that is flexible and scalable, where we can easily swap out different air monitoring sensors based on the pollutants we want to measure at a given time. We want to make sure our equipment is portable, where we can move it around easily. There may be interest here in the committee to take different measurements around the Shafter area, so we're not stuck in one spot for a long time. We can move their equipment around as needed. And we want to make sure the equipment is rapidly deployable, where we can easily grab the equipment we need, take it out to a new spot, get it up and running, and do it quickly. So we're developing our community air monitoring program with these high-end goals in mind. We're also going to be using instrumentation that's a regulatory grade that's going to produce high precision data. So as we know, there's a lot of low-cost sensor technology out there that's very interesting, very useful to get better spatial understanding. But what we're planning for our official network is using high-grade regulatory equipment that's going to give us the most precise data possible. And so a little more detail of what we're developing, we're going to have across both here and our other community in South Fresno, mobile air monitoring trailers that we can easily take around the area, mobile air monitoring vans that can take measurements while we're driving around or in a stationary mode. We're going to have more compact multi-pollutant air monitoring systems that can measure a number of things in a more compact unit, smaller than a trailer, but can easily be moved from spot to spot to take different measurements. We'll also have a collection of standalone PM2.5 instruments, which we can also easily move around to take those measurements across the community. So here's an example of just some images here of what this equipment could look like that we're developing. So on the right-hand side, that's a mobile air monitoring van. We're going to have that available here for the shafter to take measurements while we're driving or in stationary mode. So this will be equipped with a number of gas and particulate matter analyzers that we can use. That picture in the top middle, that's a more compact system where it measures a number of parameters, both gas and particulate, all within a very compact system that's more easy to maneuver around and get to different places. At the bottom middle, that's a standalone PM2.5 analyzer that we'll be using. And actually, that picture on the top left-hand side there, that is at the shafter air monitoring site. We put this analyzer up on the roof at the DMV last week, so that's now operating. We're watching the data to make sure it's looking okay. So that's being operated now in the community, and we'll be making that available soon. Yeah, it was a nice day. Beautiful day, yeah. Oh, there's one more. That's on the bottom left-hand side. That's what a traditional air monitoring trailer will look like. That's a bigger piece of equipment, a bigger platform we can use to put a lot of equipment in there, and that could be a little more stationary in a spot that's of interest. Yeah, I'll go over that. So the pollutants that we could be measuring here in the community, there's a lot of different things we can do. AB617 requires that we measure both criteria and toxic pollutants in the selected communities for the program. So some of the gas pollutants that we could measure here in the area include ozone, carbon monoxide, oxides of nitrogen, sulfur dioxide, hydrogen sulfide, total or speciated volatile organic compounds. That could be done both in real time, hourly, or we can take samples and send it to a lab for analysis, which gives us a more complete picture, but that takes longer to get the results back. For particulate matter, we can look at different pollutants like PM10, PM2.5, ultrafine particulate matter, black carbon. We can also speciate PM2.5, and there are analyzers that can do this in real time, or a lab analysis required where you got to send it to a lab, takes a few weeks to get it back or longer. We could look at toxic particulate matter, so a lot of different things we could do. This equipment can be very expensive. Just keep that in mind, too. We don't have unlimited resources to do this. And, of course, the feedback that we'll get from the committee will help us plan on which pollutants we should be measuring, what's important to you, and where we should be doing this. So to answer the question that just came up is just to give you an idea of what we have to work with here in Shafter to start with. Is we have the existing air monitoring site at the Shafter DMV, which I mentioned. That's an existing site. It measures gas pollutants already. We have PM2.5 there. We could expand some things there. That's already a place we have in town. We'll have one air monitoring trailer to place here in the community, which I showed a picture of just a few slides ago. We'll have one air monitoring van for the area, which we can take measurements both driving around or put in stationary mode next to areas of interest. We can use one to two of those more compact multi-pollutant air monitoring systems, which measures both gas and particulate matter pollutants, which we can more easily move around the area as we need to. And we'll also have two to three standalone, like the one on the top of the Shafter DMB, two to three standalone PM2.5 monitors, which we could use in the area as well. And we may potentially want to use low-cost sensors to give us better spatial representation of what's going on across the area if we think that's valuable. So, of course, as I mentioned, we can't have everything everywhere. We can't have a million trailers everywhere and measure air quality in every corner of the community. That would be great to see, but this equipment's very expensive. It takes a lot of time to operate. So because of that, we need to think about what's the best design of the network that we can do here in Shafter that makes really good use of the assets that we have. So one recommendation that we have here is the trailer itself. that could be more of a fixed point monitoring location for the community where that one doesn't move throughout the duration of the monitoring campaign. This would give us a good fixed reference point for the long term of the time here in Shafter, helping us do more long-term analysis, looking at long-term trends in the area, while the other assets that are more mobile can be moved around and take measurements in different places of interest. But we recommend that the trailer be in one fixed spot. Also, some considerations as you think about your feedback for us on community air monitoring here in Shafter. We need to think about just the reality of what it's like to try to get a monitoring site set up in an area, and we have experience doing this, and it's definitely not always easy. Some issues that come up is first we have to get the permission of the landowner to place the equipment on their property. If they say no, then that's kind of it. We can't just put our equipment anywhere we want. We got to get permission first. We have to establish a lease agreement with the property owner to make sure that's going to work properly, that agreement looks good to us and to them. We have to make sure the equipment is being placed in a location that's very secure, so our equipment will be protected. We're not going to want to place our expensive equipment out just on the side of the street and hope it's going to be there. By the time we come back a week or two later, we want to make sure it's in a secure location that's going to be protected. There needs to be access to power as well to operate our equipment. We can't just put it out in the middle of nowhere and expect for it to be able to operate. We need to have power. We also need to make sure that the places that we place our equipment meet what's called siting requirements, where there aren't any obstructions. We don't want to place it right by a building because the airflow could be blocked and it's not going to be very representative of what the ambient conditions are like. We want to make sure it's in an open area where it's capturing the general wind flow of the emissions going in the Shafter area. So we need to be careful about where we place the monitor, that it's not being obstructed by anything that's nearby. So when we think about all these factors, these important things that we need to consider, this really can kind of narrow down what's going to work for monitoring in a community. So we need to keep these in mind as we think about good spots for monitoring for this area. So before we go to the exercise of looking at the maps over here, just some questions for the committee to think about that I've already kind of raised here in this presentation is think about what pollutants are important to you to be measured in the community. Think about that and let us know. Also, give us your thoughts on where these monitoring assets and equipment should be placed in the community, keeping in mind what you have in the presentation and what we have to work with. Give us your thoughts on where the trailer could go, where our van could go to take measurements, where our more compact systems could go, and our PM 2.5 analyzers. Give us your feedback. Think about, too, how frequently this equipment should be moved around. Should it go in one place for a month, move it somewhere else for a month, or once a quarter? Once a year, what are your thoughts on how frequently the equipment should move around? And also think about what else could we provide to you in future meetings to help you think about what a meaningful network design could be here in Shafter to really help everybody understand what's happening with the emissions. So let us know what we can help provide to you to help you think about this some more. So there's our general contact information. So that's it for my presentation. And I think what we'll do now is we're going to take 5-10 minutes to let you go over to the maps over here. We'll give you 5-10 minutes to go over to the maps over here. You can take a look at the boundary of the community and look at the sources in the area. Then we have another map which shows the 7-mile radius around the Shafter area. And you can take a look at that one with the sources in the area. Take a look at those. Collect your thoughts on what the network design should look like, where we should place our monitors, what's important to you, and then we'll come back and everybody can have a chance to give us some feedback.
All right, committee members, let's wrap it up. Let's start the engagement. Okay, so again, this is part of the new format. We want to give committee members an opportunity to talk amongst the committee members and to build consensus. Before I do that, just as a sidebar, especially to the public, I know there was that one gentleman who didn't get a copy. There just wasn't enough. Our apologies. It's our job to make sure that we have a lot. But unfortunately, the printer went on. We had a little bit of a problem. So duly noted, in meeting four, we'll have ample enough materials for both for the public. So just bear with us tonight. So we're going to start here, going to go around the horseshoe, and then we're going to go to the public for input and comment and consensus building. And again, Cynthia will be taking some notes.
Okay, I had two questions in in the exercise and also in the presentation. First of all, who chose the location for the PM 2.5 and how did you guys determine to put it there? I thought it was open for the committee to know or to give an input where the monitor was going to be placed at.
So let me have John. It's a pretty basic question. I think he can answer that.
So we put the initial PM 2.5 analyzer at the Shafter DMV office because it was a quick way. We already had the infrastructure in place. The site already existed. We had communication equipment there. It was a quick way to get something up and running. If we went somewhere else, it could have taken longer. But we can get feedback from the committee. If the committee wants that analyzer to be moved somewhere else, we're certainly open to that. It doesn't have to stay there.
Yeah. How long does it take to move the PM 2.5 or the ozone? Or is it just your discretion wherever you want to place the monitors?
Yeah, thanks, Shraz. So another comment on that. This location, too, was also brought up by one of the committee members. They recommended to place it at the Shafter air monitoring site.
So it's just one committee member and you're going to decide for the whole committee? Or?
And again, I mean, if there's thoughts from the committee to move it elsewhere, we're certainly open to that. It doesn't have to be there. It just takes longer. It'll take time. You mentioned how long it could take to move it somewhere. Moving the equipment itself doesn't take that long. It just takes time to find a location, getting the property owners okay to do it, getting the communication set up. It takes a little bit of time, but moving it somewhere else is something that we can hear from the committee on.
And another question was, where in the whole monitor is the pesticide included in there? I just see PM 2.5, PM 10, ozone, but no pesticides. Where would you include that monitoring?
So us at the Air District, we don't measure pesticides ourselves. That's done by the Department of Pesticides Regulation.
Yeah, so when we get to the agenda item of next topics, if there's a consensus and the committee feels that pesticide needs to be on the agenda, What we would do on our side of the equation is bring someone in from the Department of Pesticides to talk to the committee. So, you know, that's a great question. It's something that we could just hold off till the next meeting in terms of the monitoring and then to basically educate the committee on what the state is doing with regards to pesticides.
So we can't do a motion right now to include the pesticides right now?
Well, I think what we'd like to do is talk to the department at the next meeting and then potentially build a consensus.
Can I bring a motion to do it now and then bring it up to the next meeting?
Well,
to
we,
include?
So why don't we hold and is, I'm sorry. So what we want to do, while we appreciate that pesticides is very important to the committee, we'd like to basically talk about it at the next, as the next topic for the next month's meeting. Okay, so we get it. It's important. It's
I thought
not
we
negating.
Were doing consensus. That's why there's a motion to be brought to bring the pesticide, and somebody I motioned it. Somebody seconded.
Okay, if the committee feels as a whole that pesticides is an important agenda item and that you want it. You want it on, which Cynthia's duly noted, then we'll just go ahead and vote on that and move forward if there's a consensus. Go ahead, Marie.
Para mí es mucho más importante. Es mucho más importante los pesticidas. ¿Por qué? Porque se han visto enfermedades de la fiebre del valle que apenas el año pasado empezaron a estudiar esa enfermedad y la tierra que está también contaminada porque mucha gente come pistachos y almendras y en realidad no sabe qué se está comiendo si no está bien limpio. Yo pienso que carros hay donde quiera, sí, yo entiendo. Troques también, sí. El tren también lo tenemos cada media hora, cada 40 minutos. Pero la contaminación de pesticidas son las 24 horas del día. El aire, la neblina. La neblina tiene un peso de mini partículas contaminantes también. Pienso que si vamos a empezar esto, que se empiece con lo que tenemos alrededor, lo más grande. Petróleo, pesticidas. Eso es lo más importante. Y yo no sé quién esté de mi parte, pero para mí eso es lo más importante. Yo cuido personas incapacitadas y he visto mucha enfermedad de fiebre del valle. Niños que nacen y les pega la fiebre del valle y sus riñones no se desarrollan. Hay muchos casos y eso es lo que tengo que decir. Gracias.
Great. Thank you, Maria. So I think what's on the table is that there's a consensus amongst the committee to recognize pesticides, and that what we will do is bring this up at the next month's agenda. We'll put it on the agenda, and we'll get the Department of Pesticides down here to talk specifically about some of the questions that you have.
But so what I motioned was to have the pesticide monitor. That was my motion, to have the pesticides monitor included in this monitoring, because it's not right now.
Okay, so that's a technical question, and John, you've got to address, can we monitor the pesticides?
So to answer that, let's write down that question. That's something we can consider. We haven't done that historically. We measure what we call criteria pollutants, like we talked about in the presentation. Department of Pesticides has done monitoring themselves of pesticides in the area here and other parts of the valley. So if we're able to have them, they'll come here and give a presentation to the committee here on the work that they've done. We can get some feedback from them on maybe what could be done to further monitor pesticides here.
But you're talking about the air quality. Air quality does include pesticides. We're surrounded by ag. That's the biggest alarming part, that you're included everything else, but the biggest factor is pesticides. Where is that included? You're talking about bringing DPR. You're just tossing the ball back and forth.
So Maria, excuse me, I think what we'd like to do is we agree, if the committee, there's a consensus, to at least talk about pesticides tomorrow, at the next month's meeting. You want to put it down tonight, and I think we need to hear from some other committee members if we need to do that or if we don't need to do that. We respect your opinion, and I get where you're coming from. So can we just, do you have anything else? No? Scott.
On the exercise, the 7 miles, I thought we had come to consensus at the last meeting. It still works for me. I think it captures a lot of the important sources around the outlying area, and I think, at least for my part, 7 miles is fine. To answer your concern, DPR has been monitoring here. I helped choose the site, helped DPR set up the site, and it's been continuous since 2010. And they're looking for a site to move it just a quarter mile away, but it has been collected and it will continue to be collected. And I think that's what you pointed out, is that data is available and it can be combined with whatever our monitoring and reduction plan includes. So
I have no questions.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to process this. I'm sorry. So what you're saying is you'd like to table this for the next meeting to see if someone can come and speak to us.
Yes.
But what there's, I think, I just want to make sure I have it right. So what you're saying is you guys are not monitoring pesticides right now. DPR has to do that on their own and then provide us the information and say, here's the information. We've been monitoring since X date. here it is, and then from there you'll incorporate that and say, okay, based off what DPR said, this is what we could do in this committee. Yes?
Yes.
No? Okay.
Yes.
I just wanted to clarify.
Yes. Thanks, Gabby.
Yeah. I have no questions at this time.
Anna?
I think that this horseshoe consensus where everyone gets to a chance to speak, I feel like it's not really allowing people to have a open dialogue and communication. And I think Bianca did make a motion to vote, and then we all agreed on this side. And so I would also like to second that motion that okay. We make a vote.
No, I understand, Anna. I just wanted to give the other committee members an opportunity to talk as well. I get Bianca wants pesticides recognized, and I'd like to hear the other committee members talk as well. Just, sir, just the public weigh in after as soon as the committee. Thank you. So, I duly noted.
Where do I start? So first of all, there's this thing, blueprint, right?
Yes.
Inside of it, the Community Steering Committee and Community Partnership Engagement. Everyone on this committee probably should have read it and should know that this is not a silo of where we just monitor one thing. This is a truly like avant-garde approach to address environmental justice and air quality issues in communities. So we're going to be tunneled vision to saying, you know, Valley Air District doesn't do air monitoring around pesticides. I mean, they partnered up with DPR, so they are able to do that. The question is, are we as a committee approving the 7-mile radius and the other stuff without the discussion of the pesticide? I think before we even approve or set a motion to pass anything on the SMAPs and the area sources and all that stuff, I think pesticides needs to be clarified from the get-go.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure we there's a vote, like, right? Like, the vote happened, right? We have consensus. So I think before anything is approved, I think there should be, you know, an understanding that pesticides should be this, right? And there should be a real energy between the Valley Air District, which there is, and DPR to actually do this. There is mobile pesticide monitoring. Like, that stuff exists. We're in 2019. The technology of mobile air monitoring is beyond everyone's scope, right? So there is that. Does it cost money? Of course. Those mobile pesticide monitoring range around $1,000, right? So, I mean, that already exists. On the community air monitoring, or on the community air monitoring plan, I thought it was a good presentation, man. I mean, there is a lot that the air district has done, and historically there has been just ozone here and kind of total VOCs. We appreciate the committee and everyone that PM2.5 was, I mean, we've been talking about this for years, and it has been acknowledged and has been put on there. So that's awesome, man. I appreciate that. We appreciate that. Also on, where was it at? So on the overview of the monitoring resources, I think it's very misrepresented and misleading the way kind of the Valley Air District promotes personalized and community air monitoring rather than regulatory grade. Like, we know that regulatory grade air monitoring is the thing, right? Like, we know, like, that's what Shafter, that's what Arvin, that's what so many communities have been fighting for years. But we also understand the value of personalized air monitoring, whether you get Purple Air, whether you get Airbeam, it doesn't matter, Dylos, whatever you get, right? Understanding that you get neighborhood scale air monitoring is important. So I would not downplay, you know, because there's a point where Valley Air District is potentially looking at using air sensors, like low-cost air sensors. I think that should be something that it should be like kind of just a go-to. And then on the maps, I mean, I think the 7-mile radius map and the sources that are included there, I think that's awesome. Like, I think we should definitely approach that. There was also conversations on looking at sources outside of the jurisdiction that we had originally thought, and there's some dairies and other sources on there that were not kind of analyzed, and we'll make a list and we'll share with folks as well. And there was a question on the 7-mile radius map. There is these indicators that are pink and purple. What are those?
So
there's these markers in there.
So those color-coded were basically mapped the keys that through the list. They weren't really ranked.
It's on the one with the 7-mile radius. It's these indicators, these markers, and they're like I'm not sure if they're like abandoned wells, but it's a pink and purple marker. So that was just a curiosity that a resident brought to my attention. But yeah, again, I think we cannot move. I mean, we cannot move on to the air monitoring plan without specifically addressing pesticides.
Gustavo, after the committee adjourns, if you want to just go to the map, the team that developed the map isn't here, but specifically, we're curious as to what you're referencing.
Okay. Sure.
So let's go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty much it. I mean, on providing portable air monitors, I think Airbeam has been kind of a very good kind of resource. I know there was a question on what resources can their district provide residents to kind of start looking at this, and I think these personalized air monitors, I know we've heard that purple air monitors are, I mean, you guys got like over a couple hundred, right? And so deploying those, I mean, there's a huge San Joaquin Valley, but deploying those in these neighborhood scale approaches, specifically in the 617 communities, I think could be very beneficial.
And I approve of that. Pues yo también no tengo muy claro todavía, pero espero que la próxima junta sea mejor, porque yo vivo aquí en Chapter, y pertenezco al grupo de para un chapter mejor, y lo que queremos es aire limpio. Y apoyo todo mi grupo que está pidiendo lo mismo. Gracias.
I support to Gustavo too.
Yo también apoyo a Gustavo.
Is that better? Oh. Apparently so. Okay. So I noticed that you were saying something about this whole PM particulars of 2.5. What about measuring and monitoring the PM10s? Or is that also going to be part of the measuring monitoring portion? I don't know if I asked that right.
You're asking about PM10. Would that be a part of this monitoring program? Yeah, that's certainly an option. I think in the presentation I mentioned we could measure a number of particulate matter pollutants, PM10, PM2.5, particulate matter even smaller than PM2.5. So that PM10 is certainly an option for this monitoring program.
Also, in regards to the monitors.
Is this on?
I know that you're wanting that you're asking us where we can put these. What I'm wanting to know is how far are their parameters? How far can they measure depending on their location? Like it's a certain feet, certain miles. I think if we know how far their distance, how far they can measure, then we'll know more or less where we can put them and where the places that we believe matter to measure the particulates and things of that sort.
Yeah, that's a good question. So the equipment that we use, it measures basically what passes right by the monitoring station. It's not able to measure beyond that, like miles beyond it. It measures what's happening right at the station. So wherever they're placed, we need to be thoughtful about that, where if we're trying to measure emissions upwind of the community of Shafter, some monitoring should be placed upwind of the area so we can see what emissions are coming into the area of Shafter. Downwind, so we can measure what emissions are like coming out of the Shafter area, different sources that may be of interest in the area. So it's not able to measure like a radius of air pollution around the site. It measures what's at the site itself.
In regards to taking the samples, who exactly would be taking the samples, and more or less how fast can we expect to obtain those results?
So for air district staff, we'll be taking the air monitoring samples in the area. and much of the equipment will be in real time, so you'll be able to see the results of it hour by hour as the day goes on. Other samples that we take that are going to require laboratory analysis, those samples will have to be taken, sent to a laboratory. They'll go through their process to analyze it. We'll get a report back. It could be a number of weeks or months later, and then we'll make those reports available to the public as well.
And I know that you guys are looking for access to power for operating your equipment. Have you considered trying maybe solar, or is that a little outside your price range? Or?
Yeah, that's a great question. There is some equipment, if it has a low enough power consumption, solar is an option for some of it, which makes it more flexible, where we could operate it somewhere where there isn't access to power, but that's just kind of limited equipment. If we're talking about one of our air monitoring vans or trailers or more power-hungry pieces of equipment, that's really not an option. We need to have dedicated power to make it work, but for some instruments, it may be possible.
Yeah, I was just wondering, because I know there's like a few solar panels around town, so I just figured maybe you could like borrow from their power, depending. And I believe that was what I've been mostly wanting to ask. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see, I have a couple of questions and maybe a comment. One is, I'm concerned about pesticides as well, but as I understand it, what we'll hear at the next meeting is a better presentation about that, and whether or not it can be or would be included in the air monitoring plan is not tabled forever. It is, let's get more information and hear that information, weigh that information, and then figure out the best way to make sure that the community of Shafter has a system in place that we're all comfortable with, that we are being protected from pesticide releases that would hurt us.
Yeah, I think that's fair, John.
Okay. So I think, you know, in trying to build some consensus here, it is that we're not saying, I don't think anyone is saying no to your motion. I think what everyone is saying is that, or at least what I'm saying, I shouldn't say everyone, what I'm saying is that it's important, it's extremely important. I think it's important to all of us who live here and our kids who live here, and so having it addressed adequately at the next meeting so that we understand whether or not the systems are in place to protect us is
right.
Is the question.
Right. So just so we have an understanding, is you know, based on John's premise, is we would like to educate the committee a little bit more on pesticides at the next meeting. We feel maybe at that point in time, based on what Bianca is moving towards, and your comments and questions are very valuable, we will definitely address those concerns then. All we're asking is for the appropriate department. I get, Gustavo, what you're saying, that we're already monitoring, why don't we just include it, but why don't we get the other state agency that's involved in the process to come talk to you, because quite frankly, I don't have all the answers tonight when it comes to pesticides. You want it to be front and center in terms of your thoughts of air quality in the Shaft area, and we respect that, but holding for 30 days and bringing the appropriate agency down to educate the entire committee and the public, I don't think is a disservice.
You know, I think, because I have the microphone.
I'm sorry.
And
I'm sorry.
I think it does sort of feel like a put off, and you know, I think I understand that, but at the same time, I think that what you're hearing is that it's extremely high priority.
Absolutely.
It needs to be addressed, and certainly, you know, it sounds like the majority of the folks that are here that are on the committee want to make sure that we're protected from that. And that if this committee has any way of influencing that, we want to make sure we do that. So then I had a couple of other questions. And it is, I recognize that up and down the valley we have a number of existing monitoring stations, but it would be very interesting to have a lot, you know, comparative analysis, and I'm wondering how that'll actually get developed for everything that we will be testing for in these 617 communities. Will we be able to look at other data and see where we stack up relative to that other data in those areas?
Yeah, good question. So to answer that, as I mentioned, the statewide data portal that's being developed, it'll display not only community air monitoring data, but data from the rest of the air monitoring network as well. So with that, you'll be able to look at what's happening here in Shafter, compare that to Bakersfield, to Fresno, Modesto, Stockton, other parts of the state to see how air quality here is comparing to other areas.
Okay, so as I understand the purpose of AB 617, the primary purpose is to give communities like Shafter who potentially or probably are somehow have environmental justice issues. We suffer more pollution than maybe another community that isn't as impoverished as us or doesn't have the same circumstances as us. That was the reason that 617 was established, was to look at us, communities like ours specifically, and determine how we have worse air than somebody else, and we're suffering from that.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so given that, having this program, it seems to me, be very, and one of the 14 items was for this program to be very community specific. And by that, it seems to me that what I would advocate is that by it being community specific to Shafter, we look at the sources as how they affect us as citizens, those of us who live here, consistent with AB 617. It isn't here to somehow, look at everything within 15 miles or 7 miles, and if this place has, we want to know who's polluting. We want to know the amount of it, and we want to make good public decisions about it. Or certainly I do, but I also want to make sure that whatever's happening 7 miles from us. Has an impact on us living here in the community or large bodies of people living within, some reasonable distance or are being affected by that. And I'm assuming that's what we're doing here.
Correct.
Did that make sense, or was that too? I guess my concern is that we, it's easy to pick something that we think might be polluting that's way out in the country, and we go look at that, and that has an issue. I think we can address that, but let's keep in mind that the purpose of this particular our charter is to deal with the, consistent with the 617 law, is to deal with the impacts of the pollution here on us, not necessarily the guy that's living next to the dairy. And that's an extreme, but if that dairy is affecting us, then we want to know that.
Okay.
I think that was a comment.
Thank you, John. Is there anyone from the public who, Cody, if you just get the mic back. I think the gentleman with the green shirt, Cody, had some comments.
Thank you. Without having to go back to the same thing all over and hearing John, the way he positioned it, I think it's fair. One of the things over time and what we get to see every time is how agencies do not work together, how department is doing their own thing, air district is doing their own thing. I think we have an opportunity, and I think this is what Ms. Soto was alluding to, is having those agencies or somehow having them also be part of this whole process. We're trying to get rid of the contamination, clean up the air, all of this. And it's not just the district. I think it's everybody on the pesticides. It's also on the DPR side, on the toxic waste. It's DTSC, and so on and so on. So the sooner that we get some of those agencies to start partnering, I think we're going to be in a better road. And I agree with what John was saying. I think it'll just help us all together. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So this PowerPoint lists specifically gas pollutants and particulate matter pollutants that AB 617 is supposed to measure in the community, right? And just to, not to belabor the point, but at least with pesticide and fumigate emissions, so agricultural emissions generally, they greatly contribute to a series of the emissions that you list here, right? So they contribute to PM 2.5, VOCs, NOx, ozone, and And I would just really encourage the Air District to revisit its authority to regulate, or not regulate, well, regulate pesticides that are toxic air contaminants. And just to read and be clear that there is precedent for the Air District to have authority over it. There's a case, and I'm happy to share this with you. DPR was required to identify and control toxic air contaminants, which are pesticides, in their pesticidal use. Once a pesticide has performed its fumigation role and is vented from the chamber into the ambient air, however, it has become a waste gas and is no longer engaged in a pesticidal use. At this point, an air pollution control district may legitimately regulate emission of methyl bromide, which is a pesticide, from the chamber. So I'm happy to share this case with whoever is looking into your legal authority, because I think there is precedent for the district to not dodge and blame and you know, put all the pressure on DPR, but to actually take responsibility over what it has jurisdiction over.
Yeah, duly noted. Thank you. Anyone else from the gentleman over on the far left?
I wanted to say that the presentation by John was very well presented. I thank you for the handout on the PowerPoint. It's kind of hard to see from back here. And it appears that we've asked some questions that need to be resolved between now and the next meeting. In your PowerPoint, page 5, I'm not sure where we're at on the screen. I like the fact that you said that AB 617 requires that criteria and toxic pollutants be measured in selected communities. And then you go on to explain in detail what some of those pollutants might be. And as I was discussing some issues here with one of your staff persons, you will be looking at speciated VOCs and other toxic PM, which is good. And I think what we would like to see, at least I would like to see, is that they would be broken out individually as well in a concentration manner, that we could look at it and maybe download the information for our own air dispersion modeling interests, and whether that's emission rates, and if so, what format, whether it's grams per second or pounds per hour, and also, you know, when they were collected, and that type of information that we can use in our modeling. But I wanted to piggyback on some comments from the people to my left here. And I believe it's not clear how pesticides are being monitored by DPR. If they have one monitoring station or two, the question is, how sensitive are they? Do they pick up pesticide drift from a quarter mile, half mile, a mile? Why were they placed there? And if so, is that adequate? I have my opinion, and I'll not tell you my opinion because it will prejudice what I'm going to say. I believe that could be improved. I believe that what is being done with this grant, it allows residents to be involved in community air monitoring, which helps them understand which chemicals are linked to health hazards in the ambient air atmosphere. And this is something, someone said avant-garde, it's actually entrepreneurship and environmental justice for the 21st century. I believe this could be an air quality monitoring and early warning system for communities, especially Shafter. Now, I'm not familiar with South Central Fresno, and I assume they have a very heavy ag as well, but I believe they're more industrialized than Shafter, and the population may be bigger. I could be wrong. So I believe one of the questions we should be asking is, how many monitoring sensors do we need to adequately monitor pesticide drift, VOCs, whatever, fumigation? If so, we need to look at what is the best location for them. One of the things this map does, it gives you a really nice 7-mile radius. What it does not tell me are where are the sensitive receptor sites that potentially could be harmed by pesticide exposure. By that I mean, where are the residential sites? Whether they're for families or seniors, where are the schools? Elementary schools, high schools? Where are the daycare centers? I would like to know that. I would like to have demographic data within that 7-mile radius. How many people are in that populated area, and break it down. It doesn't have to be by PLS, which is a public land survey. It could be by census tract. And then we can determine where these monitoring sensors can be placed if we're trying to protect sensitive receptor sites where people live or go to school. Also where they work, but there are other sites as important. I believe that would be a first for this community, and I'll hand it over to your...
Okay, thank you very much. Anyone else from the public that wishes to? Cody?
John, thank you for your presentation. Real quick question on the printed pages 4, it's slide number 7 in your presentation. You indicate the data will be available, and kind of piggybacking on the last community member. What would be helpful is when. Do you guys have any idea when that data will be available?
Are you asking when the statewide portal will be done and ready for use?
Both the statewide and the air district portal.
Okay, so it needs to be ready to go by July of this summer when monitoring in communities starts up officially. But we're definitely working towards trying to get it available a little bit sooner than that. So perhaps by early summer, we'll have something up and running so that by July, it'll be ready to go. And that's the same for the Air District here. We need to get it done by July, but if it's available sooner, if we can show data from this community, South Fresno, sooner, we'll try to do that.
Okay, anyone else? Great. So I think that we've come to some consensus based on some of these notes. Specifically, you know, just to review, how was the location for the PM 2.5 monitors identified? How long will it take to move? Where is pesticides monitoring in this plan? Health impacts as they relate to pesticides? Can we measure monitor pesticides? Pesticides and their monitoring should be figured out before the 7-mile radius is finalized. We're paraphrasing here, so bear with us. List of pollution sources outside of the boundaries. Personal air monitors, measurement of PM10. We've got agencies partnering to fix air quality issues. We want to revisit the authority's jurisdiction regarding pesticides. We're not clear how pesticides are being monitored. How were the locations identified? How sensitive, based on some public comment? How many do we need to monitor pesticides? And we need data based on population, et cetera. And when will the data be available? So that's a lot, but I think it's, you know, we clearly there's a consensus that we need to tackle these issues, and that's why we need to flow into the next topic before we close tonight, and that is the topics for next meeting. So what we want to do is, based on tonight's discussion, clearly is talk about pesticides at the March 11th meeting. So Bianca brought that to our attention. Gustavo was adamantly in favor of that as part of the room here on this side, and I think that there's a general consensus. And so what we will do is just go back and take all of this and digest it and get the appropriate answers and or people and departments. We don't want to kick the can down the road. We're not trying to put the issue of pesticides off. We just want to inform the committee as best we can so then we can come to some other consensus with regards to some questions that are out there. I mean, I'm an impartial juror here. You know, I'm agnostic. So I'm just trying to basically, in light of what AB 617 and its intent, is to make sure that we stay within those boundaries and that by July 1, we can come up with a plan that can be submitted that is helpful for the community of Shafter and the surrounding areas. And I'm sorry, John. Here you go.
For March, what it's talking about is the community emissions reduction plan, and what we've talked about the need of is the monitoring plan. It seems like we need to agree on the monitoring plan before we get.
Absolutely, and I think John, would you agree with that?
Yes.
I'm sorry, John Klassen. Okay. Sorry, too many Johns. Yeah. So what we want to do is we want to put the horse before the cart, and we'll obviously take what you just said into consideration. And
the monitoring program, I think that's fairly critical to
absolutely.
All of us. Okay.
Absolutely. Okay, Gustavo. Again, we're talking about topics for the next meeting, so.
Yeah, and these are also topics on part of the air monitoring plan, but that we've discussed in the last two meetings that I saw nothing about today. One was the open ag burning within this radius or outside of this radius. Two were the fireplaces. I think Tom France was very, very clear the last meeting about the information on the fireplaces, their usage. There's a Superfund site here, the Brown and Bryant site, and I know that there's currently vapor recovery systems and vapor extraction systems in place that constitutes air quality. Is that information going to be available to the steering committee? And then I think I'm not sure if it was on there, but it's been spoken before by various members, but on the very particularly focusing on monitoring during. It's seasonal trends and hot spots like almond dusting. One of the biggest concerns from residents that we've talked to them was on the dust that's created by the almond practices. So I think that's something that also has been mentioned various times, and we didn't hear nothing about that today. And then also there's a manufacturing facility here that makes mobile flaring units, and so I know that about a week or two ago I was at the CRC control room, and they're very happy and eager to tell us that they're collecting all their gases on site and burning it off, except for the North Shafter oil field where they just flare it off on site. And so I think flares is also something that we've talked about and has not been addressed yet.
Okay. So Gustavo clearly is drilling down, for lack of a better term, on sources of emission. And we will add that if there's a consensus amongst the group. I want to make sure, though, that we just don't, as John said, get off into just identifying just one source. It's really the source that affects the entire community. I'm not saying that what you've identified doesn't, but I just want to make sure that we're just not singling sources out and the committee just dogpiles on that source. And then we get away from AB 617. So duly noted, we've got fireplaces, open ag burning, vapor recovery, seasonal air monitoring, and flaring vis-a-vis CRC. Okay, anything else that the committee has? Sure. I'm sorry.
I think it's important to most definitely look at all those sources. That's great. My question is more of the consensus. What happens if this committee does not come to an agreed consensus? Let's just take, for example, today. Let's just say, half of the room said, yes, let's monitor pesticides, and half of the room said, let's move on. What do you guys do with that? Do you take both sides and take that, or do we have to absolutely come do we absolutely have to agree on the consensus for us to move on? So I think that's important to know.
So Gabby, I think what our intent with 617 is to build that consensus. And it may take a while to get there, but I absolutely understand the question that not all of us are going to agree on the same issue, and that we may have to, for lack of a better term, split the baby. So what we would do is basically go back and take both sides into consideration, We don't want, you know, to get to bog this down into Robert's Rules of Order or legal this up. What we do want to do is to build that consensus to make sure that enough voices on the committee are heard. So, you know, right now, I think we agree with Bianca that pesticides clearly is an important issue. To Gustavo's point, we're looking at certain sources, and that we'll be talking next month on the 11th a little bit more in depth, and we'll have the Department of Pesticides here, because not everybody, believe it or not, is an expert as some of you at this table. There's some community members here that when they think pesticides, maybe they're just thinking of a can of Raid underneath their sink, or, you know, for some of you who, you know, live near an agriculture field, they understand what kind of spraying is going on. But before you arrive to that consensus, in terms of fairness, I think the entire committee does need to hear from the experts. So before we jump on the issue of pesticides and it starts to, we start to go down the road where everyone says, oh, pesticides are bad, I do think that some committee members would say, time out. You know, we would like to hear exactly what the department is doing and potentially the other, what is happening in your community, And I think that's fair. So March 11th, we'll definitely have that dialogue. Just hold on. So is there anything else from the committee? Go ahead.
I just want to touch on one thing on the, as far as the CRC flaring at our Shatter facility, that is monitored daily. It's inputted greenhouse gas purposes. It's tested daily. There's numerous different factors as far as a crash valve shut. Our flaring has gone down probably 90%. You know, one of them is just mechanical PM work that we have to do on our compressors. So another option, we do go to flare. But as far as the testing, we have that data available. Anybody would like to see it?
Okay. Thank you, Brad. Anybody else from the committee in terms of next week's topics that we want to talk about? Next month, excuse me. Okay, so Cody, if you just want to hand the gentleman the mic, and I think.
Just wanted to add one thing. You mentioned subject matter experts. There is one in the county. I think that what I've heard is that we are looking at all types of sources, which is point, mobile, area, besides chemicals from ag, but from all different sources. So, but one expert in Kern County, the ag commissioner, is well suited to talk about integrated pest management, safe spraying, et cetera. If you're interested, perhaps you can consider inviting him, since you want to be upfront and you want all the expert knowledge in one room with everybody here. And if we have questions, this might be a good time next March.
That's okay. Thank you. Duly noted, Cynthia, the Ag Commissioner. It's Cody over here. This.
Just to follow up on the point about the consensus and the clarification on that, I hear the Air District, or hear the process, that we are trying to reach consensus, but that is just unfortunately not going to happen on every decision, right?
Absolutely.
And I think we all recognize that. And I think in the event that there's no consensus, would it then be moved to a, so if we can't reach consensus, then it would move to a vote, because that's similar, is the Air District open to that in the way that they allowed Fresno's steering committee to do that?
So one thing I think that you've noticed tonight is that we have a light attendance. Okay, there are some committee members that have been here in December and January that couldn't make tonight's meeting. Just a reminder, I don't want to be draconian about this, but within the rules, you know, if you miss three meetings, you know, we'd like to maybe think that, you know, you really don't want to be here. We understand that there's some extenuating circumstances. We are keeping attendance, and but quite frankly, to your point, you know, we're going to work really, really hard to get a consensus. What we don't want is just, you know, a vote after vote after vote. It's an advisory committee. This is, you know, not a legislative body per se. And, you know, we're just going to have to just tough it out. We may not agree, I mean, collectively, on some of the issues at hand. So, and I get it, democracy, is a kind of the backbone. If there are 20 people in a room and 15 say, I want this, and 5 don't, it's my job to really try to get, the other point of view. But I've got to confer, honestly, with the district to see, what they're doing in Fresno and other parts of the jurisdiction that they're holding these hearings. But, I duly noted.
Right. Yeah. So I guess just to clarify, if their consensus can't be reached the way that the Air District, right, Air District's going to make its decision because this steering committee is advisory, but the way it's reflected in the notes, is it going to be 5 yes, no? Like, how is it going? There has to be some mechanism that it's going to be recorded, and I just want to make sure that the Air District's accountable to the people on this committee, and that everyone's recognized.
But tonight, as an example, I didn't count hands or based on pesticides. I think that there was an honest discussion that pesticides needed to be discussed. It's a sensitive issue in Shafter, and we're going to move forward.
Because there was consensus, but I'm saying in the event that there's no consensus.
Well, we'll have to cross that bridge.
I mean,
I know, I get it. And to Gabby's, question, what do you do, when you've got a hard, yes and a hard no?
Right, and it's better, the Air District should be equipped to respond to those situations instead of addressing it as it arises, because that's just going to cause a series of confusion and frustration from the committee members, I imagine.
Yeah, we've got 3 meetings under our belt. We've got 10 minutes left on this one. And so that's something that I'll be addressing with the district, when that comes. But no, trust me, it's something that I think has been kind of hanging over the body of the committee. Absolutely. Anything else? Nothing? Okay, well, it's 10 till 8. March the 11th is the next meeting. I know everyone's going to be here, and we're going to really make sure that the committee members who aren't, make sure that they get here. Please sign in if you haven't, and thank you very much. That's it? Thanks, John. Do you want to look at...